Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have a great interview with UK author Natasha West, and you'll hear that in a few moments. But before we get to that, as usual, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what's been happening in the world of lesfic over the last month and what I've been up to. And I've been up to a lot, so stay tuned. But first up, the Amazon charts. And top of the pops in the US, as I record this, is still J.A. Armstrong. She seems to have been at number one for about the last 3 months I've been recording. So good work, J.A. The readers love her work. And this one is the second instalment in her first course series. And this one's called Main Dish. It continues the story of Carrie and Chef Devon as their relationship is tested with a series of obstacles. Will they overcome them and live through to the next book in the series? I'd say there's a fair chance, but read it and find out. Readers cannot get enough. Also flying high at the top of the UK charts and number two in the US as well is Harper Bliss with the next instalment in her Pink Bean series, Everything Between Us. Now, Harper says that the Pink Bean is not a euphemism, but, you know, I'm not sure if I believe her. Anyway, Harper's a regular fixture in the lesbian fiction chart, she said, chewing her words, due to her prolific output, actually, and cracking stories. And this one features Josephine Greenwood, who's a barista, who meets her feminist idol, Caitlin James, but can't quite believe she's interested in her because of her issues with her body image. That's Josephine's issues with her own body image. So interesting topic, I think, and one a lot of us can relate to, and it's getting some ace reviews already. So if you haven't checked out Everything Between Us, do so now. And Harper's just announced that she's gonna write the next three books in about a day. No, it's about 5 weeks. She's really, but that's some challenge. So we wish her the best in that challenge. I'm sure she'll do it. Top five on both sides of the pond also is a book I've seen recommended in Facebook groups, lesbian fiction Facebook groups, more than I have for ages, actually, with any book. And this book is called Ask, Tell, and it's by E.J. Noyes, who's a new author to me. And as the title suggests, it's a book based in the army in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era, with Captain Sabine Fleischer feeling the effects of the policy and married Colonel Rebecca Keane having a romance wobble at war. It's one I'm planning on reading, actually, even though it is £8. And I stumble a little bit when the price of an ebook gets over like 5-6 quid. But like I say, everyone keeps recommending it and saying how great it is. So I think I'm going to give it a go. So I will report back when I do, but it sounds interesting, and I quite like an army one, an army romance. Also doing well in the US and the UK is Susie Carr's Beneath Everything, and this is a book about diving and getting away from life. Yeah, it deals with a love story between diving instructor Jolene, and can I just say, let's have more Jolenes in lesfic, please. And Jolene meets workaholic Sarah, who needs to slow down and take a breath, but not underwater. That would be ill-advised, Sarah. The pair seemed star-crossed lovers in their lifestyles and their beliefs. But can love conquer all? You know what? I think it might. Susie Carr is a firm favourite as well in the lesfic charts. And she has some beautiful language in this one. I've just read it and I enjoyed it. And she's actually my guest on next month's podcast. So tune in for a bit more Susie Carr next month. Finally, H.L. Logan's Reunited is also doing well. A second chance romance between two women named Elle and Taylor. One's a successful rich CEO, and the other is exploring her sexuality. And they bump into each other on a beach in Barcelona. Do you like my Spanish accent there? Barcelona. And they both had secret crushes on each other in high school, which is like incredible, isn't it? I think I know where this is going, but you know what? I love a second chance romance. So my hand is firmly up in the air for this one, and that's where it's going to stay. And that's the chart roundup for March 2017. And I hope you're having a tip-top month so far. And the clocks go back this weekend, which means more daylight and therefore a happier me. I really do love this time of year when everything seems hopeful and fresh until Theresa May triggers Article 50 the week after. But let's not focus on that, eh? Let's focus on happier things. So in lesfic news this month, the Goldies have announced their shortlisted nominees for the Anne Bannon Popular Choice Award. And in no particular order, the nominees are, she said, sounding like, I'll try not to get it wrong, like in the Oscars. That was a bit of a balls up, wasn't it? Karen Coolmaker's Captain of Industry. Lynn Ames, former podcast guest with Final Cut. Melissa Braden with First Position. Rachel Spangler's Perfect Pairing. Claire Ashton, also former podcast guest with the fantastic Poppy Jenkins. Lee Lynch with her book Rainbow Gap. Marianne K. Martin with The Liberators of Willow Run, which I like because of the title. And K.G. McGregor's Trial by Fury, also a former podcast guest. So good luck to all those nominees. They haven't announced the categories, any of the other categories, but that's the Anne Bannon Popular Choice. The Lammies, the Lambda Literary Association, or the Lammies to their friends, have also announced their shortlist, and there are plenty of lesfic authors up for gongs. You can check out the Golden Crown Society's website, and I'm sure they'll be updating with more nominees soon, along with the Lambda Literary Association website for all their nominations, which are all out. But standouts include Kiki Archer up for Lesbian Romance with Lost in the Starlight, along with Rachel Spangler for Perfect Pairing and Lila Bruce for Little Lies. So good luck to them all. And the Goldies take place in July and the Lammies take place in June. So what have I been up to in the past month? Well, quite a lot, actually. February was my first month of big travel for the year. Big travel with a capital B and a capital T. And it was great, actually. My wife and I spent a week in Hong Kong and then 2 weeks in Japan. Hong Kong was a family visit, as my wife's family lived there. So that was really cool. And then Japan is somewhere I've always wanted to go, and it didn't disappoint at all. We spent time in Tokyo, Osaka and Kyoto, and I really, really loved it. The people were friendly. The place was just beautiful and clean. The sun shone, blue skies. The food was ace. The beer was cold and served in chilled glasses. And, you know, that ticks most of my boxes, you know. I'm a simple creature with simple needs. And it doesn't take much to make me happy. Just give me a cold beer and in a chilled glass, and a proper glass. All the ones in Japan had, you know, like handles and stuff, which is very exciting. And so it was a great trip all round. We got to see some temples and some shrines in Kyoto. We got to see lots of different sights and sounds in Tokyo. That was like very in your face, very high energy, chaotic. Lots of flashing lights everywhere. And I was also quite adventurous when we went to a Michelin-starred sushi restaurant on day one. I ate all sorts of fish that tasted as if they just jumped from the water. And I also ate, are you ready, cod sperm sack. Yes, you heard that right. I wasn't sure I'd heard right when the chef gave it to me. But, you know, I popped it in my mouth and, you know, it's a Japanese delicacy. So, you know, when in Tokyo, I thought I'd give it a go. And it wasn't too bad. it was fishy and creamy. And that's where we'll leave the cod sperm sack. I'm not sure I'd eat it again, but, you know, it was an experience. And anyway, my travels were a great break from looking at a screen all day. I had been suffering a bit of a headache prior to going, but I came back renewed, rejuvenated, and I even did manage to squeeze in a bit of writing while I was away because I did kind of miss it. So I did a couple of early mornings overlooking Hong Kong Harbour, and I got a bit of writing done on the plane out, and then I racked up about sort of 5,000 or 6,000 words on the plane back, which was awesome. And since I've been back, I'm well into my stride working on the third book in the London series. I think this one's going to be called A Girl Called London, and it's really started to take shape over the last couple of weeks, so that's ace. No release date as yet, but you'll be the first to know when I think it's ready to drop. So, yeah, I'll keep you posted. And as well as travelling and writing, I also did a couple of sales over the past month, which was terrific. So if you bought my All I Want box set or This London Love, while they were both 99p or 99 cents, I hope you enjoyed them. It's always great doing sales, actually, because more new readers try you out, give you a go if they haven't read you before. So I will be doing more of those in the future, with collaborations with other authors and otherwise. So that's awesome. And as ever, if you would like to try out some of my writing for free, you can sign up to my mailing list and you'll get my free Christmas romance, It Had to Be You, which has had some fantastic reviews. So I hope you do that. That's at www.clairelydon.co.uk, and just fill in the your name and email address at the top of the page. Okay, that's enough about me. Next up this month, it's the interview section, and this time it's with fellow Brit author Natasha West. I hope you enjoy. Joining me today is Natasha West, a writer from the same fair isle as me, the UK. Natasha's been churning out the books over the past year or so, releasing a rom-com series, including The Plus One and Something for the Weekend, as well as tending to her other series involving lesbian Lothario, Julia Hawke. Natasha lives with her partner in the UK's unofficial gay capital, Brighton, so welcome, Natasha.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you here, and what have you been up to today?
I'm just working on a new lesbian romance book, actually, at the moment, so I've been tapping away.
Yeah. And do you want to describe to listeners where you are, paint a picture of where you're speaking to us from today?
Oh, I'm in my living room, at the dining table, looking out onto my street, I guess, and there's a tree. This is not a very exotic locale.
Have you got some lovely curtains up in your lounge windows?
They're pretty good curtains, yeah. I mean, you know, Argos's finest. That's
all I can say. Perfect. And UK listeners will know what that means.
Don't look it up.
So tell me a bit about how you got started writing lesbic.
Well, I've been writing for a long time, but the thing about writing is it's a real journey, like trying to sort of get your start and get readers and all of that. And I got tired of, like, having to deal with people who decided if anyone was going to get to read you or not. I just got fed up with it. And then I read an article about self-publishing. And I thought, oh, I'll give that a try. How hard can that be? I'm sure it'll be really easy. I'll just write a book and immediately make loads and loads of money. Which didn't exactly happen.
No.
but eventually I did sort of find a bit of a groove with it. And mm-hmm. It's going pretty well now. People are reading my books, so I'm really happy.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I know it's a kind of a funny myth, isn't it, that you write a book, put it up on Kindle, and then you shall become a millionaire. It didn't happen to me either, which was one of my deep regrets.
Yeah, the millions have not exactly come yet, but I'm sure they're on their way.
Yeah, I'm sure they are for both of us. No, I mean, like you say, It's all about building a fan base, isn't it? So
exactly, yeah.
So I read your book, The Plus One, which I really loved, I have to say, and it was a great premise. Two women who meet as teenagers, had a brief fling, and then never spoke again, only to meet again in later life. So tell me a little bit about writing that book.
Well, the inspiration came from, I was watching a documentary and it mentioned about the thing in Japan that the book is about, which is people hiring out people to be their family members or their friends or their partners at social functions. And it just really sparked something off. And I was like, what kind of person would need that? And what kind of person would do that? Mm-hmm. And that got me interested in that idea. So then a sort of story erupted from that. And then I liked the idea that they knew each other before, sort of rom-com style. So I thought that would be fun. So that's how the book came about.
Okay, and did you do quite a lot of research into the whole, that sort of whole agency thing, like hiring someone to be your partner?
Yeah, it's difficult to find information on it for obvious reasons. Obviously, people don't really want to, you know, like, it's supposed to be kind of secret. So, you know, people have to be quiet about it, because if the point is to kind of hide this alleged gap in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of looked at it, so I tried to sort of imagine it from my own angle, like, what? Why would I need something like that? And what kind of person would I want to be next to me, helping me out in that way?
Yeah, yeah. And I think if anyone's read the book, you'd all definitely want Amy, because she sounded like
perfect. Oh, yeah.
She sounded perfection, apart from, you know, everything that happened before.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I tried to write somebody who seems absolutely perfect on the surface, but underneath has the same insecurities as anybody else, but is great at, like, projecting perfection.
Yeah, no, yeah, you really did get that over very well. And I particularly enjoyed, I really like both the lead characters. I particularly enjoyed the Charlie Shoes comment. That really made me laugh and stuck in my head. And where Charlie's mum always yells at her when she comes in the door, Charlie Shoes, to take your shoes off, and then her dad calls her Charlie Shoes. So I thought that was a particular brilliant observation. Is there any truth based in that observation?
No, I was just looking for a really classic sort of crap dad joke.
Yeah.
And that was what came to mind.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head with that one, definitely. And and the dad does come across as cringingly dad-like. So
yeah, definitely. He's based on, I went to a wedding and the bride's father was basically that guy. And he was just like constantly, like, whenever he could get the spotlight on himself, it was like this kind of real need to get that attention and get the laughs, and he struggled when people didn't laugh at his jokes. So right. That's who he's based on. A person I actually met.
Oh right, okay. And I, like I said, I really enjoyed the humour in the book. It had some laugh out loud scenes, and the two leads, Charlie and Amy, were very endearing. How easy do you find it to include humour in your books? Is it something that just comes naturally, or is that something you work on?
I think it did come very naturally, and in the first two books that I wrote, I suppressed that a little bit, and then the Plus One was the first time I went for all-out humour, and that was the first successful book that I had, so I feel like that's what I should have been doing all along, really. Not that, you know, that sometimes you don't, it's not about humour, sometimes you want to go a bit more serious, but I think those have been my most successful books, so that's my style, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think somebody on Twitter said that we have similar styles. I think we've got the same
sort of
British sense of humour going
on.
Yeah,
it's a classic sense of humour, isn't it? It really is a particular
Absolutely. And I think readers really do respond to, humour. And romantic comedies will always do well, you know. Look at Hugh Grant, he's built a career on it. So,
I'd
love to see one sort of, a book like yours or a book like mine made into a romantic comedy film, wouldn't you?
I yearn for that. I absolutely yearn for that. And that's why I write the books that I do, because that doesn't exist.
Mm.
So, because I want that so much, I started writing them.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
So everyone could have them.
Me too. So, yeah, no, that's really interesting. And they say a first novel is your most autobiographical. I know the Plus One wasn't your first novel, but it was the first one in the rom-com series, which also includes Something for the Weekend and A Marriage of Connivance. I read that as convenience for so long, so...
It's perhaps an overly complicated title.
how much of you is in those characters in the Plus One or the other books come to that?
I think no matter what character you write, even if they're not really anything like you, and a lot of my characters aren't really what I'd call true to me, there's always something of me in there, I think, because I think if you really want to write a character that speaks to people, it has to have a truth in it, and that truth has to come out of you. So even if that person is not really you, you can always find something of yourself in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, yeah. So a bit of you in Charlie, a bit of you in Amy, a bit of you in
Yeah, Charlie's, like, awkwardness, and Amy's wall you know, that's all me, definitely.
Yeah, cool. And interestingly as well, talking about Amy, you made her bisexual rather than lesbian, which is still quite a rarity in lesbian fiction these days. And diversity in lesfic is a hot topic. So was that on your mind when you wrote it, or did that just fit the character?
I don't see any controversy in that decision. I gave it barely a thought. That was just who she was. I think, you know, bisexuals need to be recognised. I don't see it any other way.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely, I agree with that totally, 100%. But I think it's coming up more and more, I think, at the moment.
Yeah.
And rightly so, just, you know, sort of, I think we all need to write more diverse characters in lesfic.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, it was nice.
As everybody wants more gay characters, within our particular industry, we need our own level of diversity as well, I think.
Yeah, no, totally. And I read the second book in the rom-com canon as well, Something for the Weekend, which centres on two teachers and how they meet each other at the same teachers' conference every year. And it reminded me of David Nichols' One Day, similar premise, right? What inspired you to write that? Was it inspired by One Day or not?
It wasn't really, but as I was writing, I realised there was a parallel. But what I wanted to really do was write two characters who are not right for each other until one day, like, time and history and lessons makes them right for each other. Like, the idea that people, it might not work then, it may work 5 years later, it may work 20 years later. I thought that was an interesting idea. So coming back again and again was the best way for me to do that each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that was an interesting concept. And have you been to a teacher's conference, or do you know someone who's been there? Because
not a teacher's conference, no, but I know people who are very involved in unions, so I've got some experience with that.
Okay, because I thought you captured the dreariness of a conference very well.
Thank you.
I mean, I've never been to a teacher's conference, but I've been to, conferences in general. When I used to be in academia, and there were some very dry days there, sort of in lecture halls and things.
Yeah.
And in the couple of books I've read, the sex scenes have been fairly modest, not fade to black, but not explicit. And is that something that is the same in all your books, or is it, does it differ across titles?
I definitely experiment with that line. People have very different reactions. Whatever you do, there'll be somebody that's like really happy with it, and somebody else who won't want that. Some people really want explicit sex scenes, which I have done in my Hawk series. And I have definitely kind of made it a little bit quieter because, you know, I'd say in a romantic comedy there's less room for explicit sex. I'm not sure why that is, but that feels true to me. So I tend to write less sex in the comedies.
Right.
Unless it's funny sex.
Yeah. And there's always room for funny sex.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's been a bit of a clamour in a few lesbian reading groups I've seen online recently for more realistic funny sex. So,
I'll think about that.
Take heed.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And your books are set in the UK. Is that true of the Hawk series as well?
Yes, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't ring true if I tried to write it anywhere else. So sometimes I'm very non-specific about where I'm writing. But I think the British element will always kind of creep out anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think same for me. Although I have been considering, you know, writing something that's not set in the UK. My last book that came out was partly set in San Francisco. So I have been there a few times, so I felt like I could do it. And there's always...
Yeah, I think if you've got experience with that area, I think you can... Definitely. Did you write it from a British perspective?
Oh yeah, she was a Brit abroad for like six months. So yeah, I think a bit like you, I might think twice about doing an American. But there again, I think it would be okay. I'd just have to get a lot of Americans to check it.
Yeah, definitely.
See that I haven't used any, you know, British words in it. But so as you say, your stuff is very British centric, which I love. And what's been the reaction to your writing and settings from people who are not set in this country?
Well, I think people... I don't know if they react to Britishness or if they just react to my own individual style, which inevitably is British, but I think if you sort of find your own voice, my voice is British, but it's also me and lots of other things. That's what people react to, I think, is like your own voice.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. And just talking about that, sort of your where your fans are based, because I was looking at your reviews and you've got a lot more reviews in the US, which I take it means that you sell more there. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do.
So why do you think that the Americans have taken to you so much? Have you had a lot of feedback from them?
It's very difficult to say why that is, but I think that everybody likes a world different than their own, really. I think to other people, probably my writing is somewhat exotic. If you're from Canada or America or Australia, a glimpse into a different world is always going to be interesting if it reads true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally agree with that. And the rom-com books weren't your first releases, as I've said. The first ones were in 2015, and that's your Julia Hawke series about a Lothario writing professor. Now, Julia has been described as a complex character with 3D with flaws. So tell me about making your characters as real as possible in your books.
Well, I think it's an instinctive thing for any writer to kind of dig into themselves, as I said earlier, like dig into yourself and find yourself in that character, find that like glimmer of humanity that's you, something, a truth about you, especially if it's a negative truth is more interesting, I think. So I guess that's sort of looking into myself for what's interesting about me. If there is anything.
Did you make a big long list?
Yes, I did. I made a list of how fascinating I am. It's really long.
And that all went into Julia. Are you planning to carry on that series?
Well, the third book just came out. Hawk's Flight, available on Amazon right now. There's my little plug.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there will be a fourth book. I wouldn't want to say either way. I want to leave myself open with that one because I have read reviews that have said, "Oh, we could maybe take another one." So, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. And you released a slew of books in 2016, going at a dizzying pace. Did you have these all written and ready to go, or were you just like working like a Trojan all year?
Yeah, I just wrote them one by one. Once the Plus One came out, I kind of wanted to capitalise on the success of that, so I just tried to get them out as well and as fast as I could. So, you know, I just worked as hard as I could last year.
Wow, that's pretty impressive that you wrote straight after that, because I'm very impressed. And clearly that worked, because you had success with the other two as well, right?
Yeah, there's been a few, and they've done okay. I'm happy with how they've done, I should say.
Yeah, cool. And I've read a couple of posts on your blog, and you've written there why you love writing and why sometimes you hate it. Now, after the successful year you had in 2016, what are your thoughts now?
Well, I reread that article myself and thought about that, whether or not I felt differently, because it was over a year ago that I, you know, said what I thought about what was hard about writing, what was great about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I feel like I've just got a completely different set of problems now. So it's, I would say things are going well, but there's still pressures, you know, to be considered. So I have different problems, but I still have a set of problems around being a writer, and I still have a set of things that are brilliant about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answer made sense. But
what are those problems? What's changed? What are your problems now?
Well, now I have a readership and they expect a certain level of quality, and I have to satisfy them. That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
Because they allow me to keep going. So they deserve as well as I can do. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to let them down.
Right, okay. So it's a different kind of pressure going on now.
Yeah.
And you're indie published, so you can do, you can go at your own pace and you can do your own thing. Did you consider going down the traditional route, or was indie always your plan?
Well, when I decided to go indie, which was in 2015, I really felt like it was difficult at first, but why I really wanted to do it was because I was tired of people being in a position to say yes or no to me. And that system is changing, I think, which has pluses and negatives to it. But I think if you write a book, no one gets to tell you that it's not any good or no one will read it. That doesn't have to be anybody else's decision. That could be put in the hands of the reader now. And I think that's a great thing. And that's what I really like about self-publishing.
Yeah,
so that's why I really wanted to. It's why I'm really happy using this system.
Yeah.
And when people don't want to read me anymore, then that will be their decision.
Yeah.
If they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Please don't make that decision. Please keep reading me.
I think you're absolutely right there. Digital publishing has opened up. The gatekeepers have gone away, and it's opened up a whole new world of authors for all minority groups have really capitalised, and so LGBT especially, which is great, and allowed me to do this as well. So it's brilliant. Can you describe your writing process to me these days? Because you do this full time, right?
I do this full time now. Yeah, which I'm able to do because of the process of self-publishing. It can vary from day to day, but I would say I'm definitely more of a morning person. So I will try and get as much as I can done in the morning, and then, you know, whatever happens in the afternoon is what happens. But I try to hit a certain word count. You know, you have to keep yourself in check. That's the thing that I think I struggle with, but you have to keep yourself in check. You have to keep yourself motivated.
Yeah, yeah. What's your word count what was your word count, I'm interested to know, last year when you were writing all those books?
I tried to do 2,000 words a day. Sometimes I did more than that, and occasionally I did less than that. If I had a day where that didn't really work, I'd work at the weekends.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
I sort of think, here is the period of time where this book will be written, and whatever times those words were written, that didn't matter as long as I hit my target, which would be a certain date.
Yeah, no, that's pretty doable. So
yeah.
I know I'm you know, I think I have writing spurts, so I go, you know, I'll write a load, and then I won't write for a couple of weeks, and I know that I need to nail down my, you know, doing it in a regular time slot. But I think, wow, if I carried on, I could get so much more done.
Yeah, I know, but it's like a muscle, and you do get tired, but like the more you work the muscle, the more you can do. But eventually every muscle gives out, you can't keep going forever.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And do you have any mantras that you use to get yourself sat down in a chair and writing? Or just in your writing process generally?
Well, I would say the one thing that I say to myself often, it's as close as I have to a mantra, is whatever problem you encounter in your work, there's always a way around it. So whether that be a problem within the book, like you're struggling with something, or your own motivation, or a block, or anything like that, there's always a way around it, and you figure that out after years of writing. Like, there's no problem that is insurmountable. There's nothing you can't figure out if you just give it enough time and be patient,
mm-hmm.
and not beat yourself up, which is important.
Yeah, don't do that, everyone. And do you write straight onto a laptop or computer, or do you write by hand?
I could never write by hand. I would never get anything. I've got terrible handwriting. I would not be able to read anything that I'd written, and my hand would not be able to keep up with my brain. So I'm definitely a laptop person.
I'm exactly the same, but you'd be surprised the amount of people who still write by hand.
I know. It's amazing to me. It's impressive. It's sort of a beautiful idea of handwriting, like, you know, days of old, with a bit of parchment or something, but it's not something I can do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I wouldn't be able to read my writing, and you're doubling your work. It boggles my mind, but there you go.
Yeah.
So
much of writing is editing as well. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
So, like, crossing out light, it would just take forever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what's next for you? Have you got more rom-coms in the pipeline, or are you gonna...
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So you said
I'm writing one as we speak.
Right. So you said you're writing one. So when is that due out?
Yes, I would guess about mid-April.
Okay.
That's what I'm shooting for, but I'm sort of juggling a lot of things at the moment. But I think that seems doable. So I would say mid-April.
Cool. And are you going to stick with lesfic or try your hand at another genre, or for now stick with lesfic?
Well, I like to do lots of different things. Like, I think that's what keeps your brain ticking on, is to continually challenge yourself. But I think there'll be plenty of lesfic books coming out of me this year.
And have you got a number that you're shooting for? Because how many did you bring out last year? Was it sort of four? More than that?
Five, maybe six, I'm not sure.
Yeah. You lost count.
Yeah, I did. I think I've written about eight books. Five or six.
Okay.
Five or six, that's the number I'm going with.
And is it similar for this year, you're thinking?
Yeah, I think I would like to get a minimum of six out.
Okay, cool. And are your friends and family, do they just say, oh, stop writing the books, I can't keep up with you?
I don't discuss it with friends and family, because I wouldn't put the pressure on them to have to read everything that I write.
Right.
Because they've all got lives.
Yeah.
So as long as my readers are happy, that's all I care about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you there, but it's just, I think my friends and family, when I started writing, all were following me and reading everything. And then I started speeding up and they were just like, oh, will you stop it? So, you know, yeah. Now when I see them, they go, oh, I haven't read your book. I say, it's okay. It's okay. Don't worry. So,
yeah, if somebody asks me, I'll say, just read that one. That'll be fine. You know, I'll be happy if you read that one.
Yeah. And are you an avid reader of lesbian fiction yourself?
I have less time for reading than I've ever had. So I used to read lesbian fiction and I rarely get the chance anymore, I'm afraid, because also it's my job now.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a busman's holiday.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of other things do you read? What's your sort of, what's your go-to if you want to relax?
I'd say to switch my brain off, I would probably read like a really sort of trashy crime thriller or something.
Okay, yeah.
These days.
Cool. And what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
I don't know where I came across this advice, but I've always found it to be true. Don't talk about your project too much. Like, don't talk about being a writer, just write. Like, if you talk about being a writer, that does not make you a writer. Put words down on a page, nothing else makes you a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't endlessly talk about what you're planning to do, because you will never do it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good advice, I think.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a bit dull explaining to people exactly what you do. So, you know.
It really is, yeah.
And if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose?
I thought about that today, and the answer that I came up with was Ian McEwan and Nick Hornby.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're both good at observation, and that's something that interests me, like in really different, disparate ways. So I want a little bit of each of their talent.
Yeah.
So that's why those are the people I pick.
That's a good answer. I'm a big Nick Hornby fan, so that's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go with him for sure.
Yeah.
And I just watched Brooklyn, actually, recently. Have you seen that movie, Brooklyn?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, because he wrote the screenplay for that, didn't he? And I really enjoyed
that.
Yeah,
it's very different from anything else. His screenplays are often quite different from his books. They're a lot less humorous.
Mm.
I don't tend to be so keen.
Oh, really? Okay. I really enjoyed Brooklyn. I've never seen anything else he's done screenplay-wise, so not to my knowledge, anyway.
An Education.
Right, okay. I haven't seen that. No.
Yeah.
But I love all his books, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. And where can people find out more about your books, talking of books? Are you on all the digital platforms?
I'm on Twitter... And I have a WordPress as well, and that's about it. I'm on Facebook, but I don't do anything with it.
Okay.
I'm not great at social media, to be honest with you.
But if people wanted to buy one, you on Kindle and anywhere else?
Yeah, my books are all available on Amazon, slash Kindle. Yeah, I'm not available anywhere else other than that.
Okay, so just Kindle. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this has been great, Natasha. Thanks so much for taking the time. And good luck with all the books you're writing this year.
Thank you very much, Claire. It was lovely to speak to you.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, the London series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Bella Books, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon. I'm on Instagram at ClaireFic, and I'm on Facebook, Claire.Lydon. So come on down, follow me, sign up to me, all those things. And yes, if you'd like a free romance, www.clairelydon.co.uk. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated. And make sure you tune in to listen to Ragtime, another great show on the platform, as well as The Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. And join me next time for more hot book club action, where I'll be interviewing the lovely Susie Carr. See you then.